Hello, everybody. Welcome. This is Julie Knudsen with the podcast Training the Pointing Labrador, episode number 118. I have been getting all kinds of really excellent questions. I don't know. Maybe it's because the videos are out and as people are watching those. I'm not sure, but I have been getting some fantastic questions. So what I'm going to do is compile them into a good group and have a podcast just answering those and kind of sharing that with everybody, because there's some really thoughtful, insightful questions that I think other people would enjoy hearing. But maybe as a precursor to that, today's episode is going to be a discussion about the general nature of dogs. And this is very important because dog ownership, dog managing, dog training, and you know, dog competing, whatever it is you do with them, is not a result of a series of steps that someone gave you. And that's usually what people are looking for. It's like, okay, I have a puppy. Tell me, what do I need to buy? And then what are the steps I need to take? What do I need to say? What words do I need to use? People are very, very much into the nuts and bolts of the do this, do it with this, and do it this way, and do it this long. And one of the things, the most overwhelming, huge thing that is overlooked in any how-tos and any stuff is the nature of the student that you are teaching. And I have some very early podcasts, 100 podcasts ago probably, on the nature of the student. But any of us, okay, so any of us that live in regular life, maybe you have kids, maybe you are a kid, maybe you have a significant other, you're in a relationship with someone, married to someone, maybe you have people who work for you or for whom you work. But in the more that you understand your employees, the more you understand these people, you know, what makes them tick, how do they think, what's important to them, how do they function, you know, what is their emotional state, all those things, what is their, you know, how quickly do they understand things. The more you understand that, then the more effective relationship you can have with them. The more you can, the more effectively you can communicate. The more that they will open up and trust you. And the more you can get done out of whatever kind of relationship you have. You know, if it's employees, they'll do better work. And they'll be more, you know, they'll feel better about it. And they can kind of be very comfortable and maybe even do more than you ask because of the nature of how you deal with them. And the same thing in relationships and kids. You know, if you just have a kid and it's a kid and they're supposed to do this and go to school and play on the soccer team and come home and take the trash out, and you don't really look and see what's going on with them and how they, you know, how they are, then sometimes problems can ensue from that. And in the dog world, my heavens, it is incredible to me how much we don't look at that kind of thing when we interact with our dogs. You know, you're going to go buy your champion Basenji, or your, you know, champion Pointing Lab, or your champion Bouvier, whatever. I mean, you go and you get this dog and go, all right, I got one of these. And then we have a whole list of, okay, they do this and they're this way. And I read on their website that their temperaments are like this, and this is what they like to do. And so you get all of these ideas in your mind about, you know, how these dogs are. And, you know, those are good guidelines. Breeders have good guidelines. You know, you read about what's the temperament of a Basenji. And, you know, that gives you a good guideline on what you may have. And then when you get your dog, the thing is to find out exactly what it is that you do have. And I know for a lot of people, that's a little bit, you know, it's like, yeah, right, how am I supposed to do that? And I think that, one, if you're going to own a dog, and certainly if you're going to train and compete with a dog, the clearer view you have of your student, again, the easier things are going to be for you, and therefore also for your dog. So if you take dog training and dog work very seriously, then one of the places to begin is understanding what you've got in that four-legged bundle of fur. And so I want to talk about dog types. Like I have, I think 100 podcasts ago, I did a series on understanding your student. which is kind of what I'm talking about now. But understanding what you have, and then mapping out your plan for coexisting with this dog, teaching this dog, and getting what it is you want out of this relationship with them. Very, very important. So again, for the sake of example, most people listening to this are retriever people, not all. Some of you guys have some of the furrier guys and the longer haired guys or whatever. But this is for everybody. But for sake of example, I'm going to use retrievers because, again, that's, I think, the majority of my audience. But when you buy this little four-legged dog, you know, with puppy breath, and they are, right, they're just, it's just a precious thing. There's no such thing as an unattractive, unlovable puppy. Almost none. And if you listen to my puppy picking thing, and I hope people did, even if you're not getting a puppy, but if you have an opportunity to evaluate little dogs when you get to pick one, that forces you right there to start looking at these guys with a little bit of a different set of eyes. So you're going to look for certain characteristics. You're going to look for certain mental characteristics and physical characteristics in these little guys. And those things that you look at when they're little guys are, one, you look at a relative level of intelligence. You know, can they figure stuff out? Are they aware? You know, are they tuned into certain things? Do they sort of figure cause and effect? Ow, when I step over there where that sharp rock is, it hurts. I won't do it again. I can't get over this log, so I think I'll go around it. There's a lot of things where their level of ability to think and assimilate is something you can look at, because that's going to be a factor. Then you look at other things like their boldness, their courage, their willingness to go experience something that they've never experienced before, to be somewhere they've never been before, and all to get into the water when they've never been in the water before. Just the boldness and the courage, and some of that is a little bit of just the excitement about being alive. Now, again, if they're just too dumb to know that these things, they don't even know about these things, then that's a different deal. And we talked about that in that section. But you look at that. You look at their ability to connect with you. And this is kind of an emotional, psychological thing. Some dogs are very, very strong connectors. And being with you is a huge part of what they sense as their purpose. And other dogs have some. And some dogs have very little to none of that. And so a lot of times in puppies, it's not absolutely definitive in a 7 and 8 week old dog. But a lot of times you can look and see that. Then there's other things like their interest in retrieving, their interest in feathers, their interest in traveling over the ground, even when they get tired. Do they still want to go? Do they have ease of movement? So a lot of stuff that we talked about, that gives you a lot of insight into your puppy. At least some. It gives you some insight. And if you go at puppies with that in mind, you're already kind of a leg up on looking at your dog. But so we've gone to that part. Now we're going to come, you know, we've got the puppy at home. And so there's so much to observe and pay attention to. I didn't say take any actions, but to observe and pay attention to. Now, there are different kinds of dogs, and I'm not a categorizer. You got your type A and your type B. I just can't do that. I can't do it to people, and I can't do it to dogs, but there certainly are areas that they fall into. And some of these areas, for example, are, let's say, their interest in doing new things, having new experiences, going new places. Some dogs love it, just love it, and some dogs are frightened by it. All right, you can see that with little puppies, but that's an important thing. So if your dog is one that's a little bit tentative about new things, doesn't mean it's a bad dog, doesn't mean give up. It just means take that kind of thing into account, right, if they're tentative. Maybe they are very, very bold. Matter of fact, almost like a bull in a china closet. Okay, you might have one of those things. So then take that into account and go, all right, I can't just turn this dog loose everywhere because it's just going to, you know, go into the neighbor's yard or go right across the street or whatever. So there's a lot of things with young dogs that you need to notice and pay attention to. And what most of us do when we get these little dogs is we got our list. Okay, we got our little puppy leash and we have our, you know, training treats and we have, I think there's a Chewy commercial on there where they're going, okay, I gotta have a puppy. What do I need? A potty pad? I guess that's if you live in an apartment. Good Lord, why would you ever teach your dog to go in the inside the building? But anyway, all these little things, you know, and that stuff's fine. But more important is give me the tools to figure out what I have here. So traits of animals that I think are important to become aware of and take into account when you train them. Okay, one of the first ones I'm going to say is this connection thing. I would always pick a dog. I'll pick a dog. If I were picking puppies and there was one super performer, just a great dog, just fantastic, but never would make eye contact with me, never came over when I sat down, but was busy beating up another dog or doing something else, but that was the best retriever, and that little dog, say, pointed, and he just did everything, I probably wouldn't pick that one. If there was another one who was okay at that other stuff, but just looked at me and responded to me and stared me in the eyes. Because when those little guys look you in the eyes, you are connecting on a very, very inner level, if you've ever felt that. Now, if you don't have that, then it's not going to be important in your dog either. But if you do, that's really important. So a dog who connects with you and values your presence and your participation in their lives, that's an important thing. Because if you have one of those that does connect, then that dog is going to work with you more and be probably a little more trainable because of their willingness and the importance of you. That's a factor to take into account. If they do not have that kind of connection, then that's going to change the nature of how you teach them. When you teach the connectors stuff, you show them, you tell them when they're doing it right, you don't let them do it wrong, you show them how to do it correctly, and those guys are just like, this is what I do, this is great, oh, and we're together. So the training is a lot easier, is particularly if you're proactive and don't let them do a bunch of bad stuff and then come back in and start teaching them the right stuff. Teach them, never let them learn the bad stuff. Teach them all the good stuff, and they're so easy. If you have one dog that's not real connected with you, then you're going to have to go tell them, this is what you have to do. And I'm going to enforce it until you understand that you seriously have to do this. You have to walk on a leash. You have to sit. You have to come back to me on a retrieve. You know, you can't make noise whenever you want. And they're not going to do the right things because it makes you happy. They're going to do the right things because you told them they had to and there weren't any other choices. Real nice thing to know when you begin training a young dog. Another thing that is very important is the dog's ability to focus. And this is in the book. I think it's on one of the five priorities that I have in there. That's way up there, right? Some dogs are just like some people, just an incredible ability to focus, and they focus early on. And some dogs, it's very difficult to focus. And some dogs, it's almost not possible, but there's no such thing as impossible. But the ability to focus is something that it's one of the things I'm going to notice when I get a new dog in for training. The ability to focus is, if they don't have one, I have to develop it as much as I can. So, and you can't just let them, just like a kid, ADHD kids, you know, they sit, I know I have two of them, right? They sit in school and it's hard to sit in the chair. And then it's hard to stay on what the teacher's saying, particularly if it's boring. And so you don't punish them because they're that way. And you also don't just say, okay, you don't have to pay attention. You have to help them develop mechanisms to focus a little bit at a time, et cetera, et cetera. But you have to be aware of that in order to help them develop mechanisms to focus. And for me and dogs, I use little short blurbs of basic obedience to begin to develop focus. And it literally takes weeks and weeks and weeks, sometimes months, to begin to optimize that dog's ability to pay attention and stay engaged. That's a problem a lot of people have, and they refer to it as, air quotes here, puppy. Well, he's just a puppy. You know, he's a year old, and the dog is just crazy, and they're going, he's just a puppy. No, he's a dog that has no ability to focus, and you never helped him develop one. A really important part of just owning a dog, and certainly if you're training. They can't learn things if they're not focused. And you saw many of these dogs that have trouble with that, the ADHD guys, you have to help them develop how to do that. And again, for me, the walk, on everything, the walk is good. That's where they can begin to, you can tell what their focus is. That's where you learn. You take your little puppies on a walk, you learn everything about them out there. The intelligence, the boldness, the connection, and also the ability to focus. If all of their behavior out there is very random and just kind of wild and maintains that, is consistently that way, then we have a dog who mentally is not on stuff very much. You know, they might be smelling something and then whoop, their butterfly flew by. Well, now they're over there and they're not focusing on any particular thing they're doing or even your location. Okay, instead of getting mad, you have to go, aha, the focus thing is difficult here. So I need to help this dog develop focus. And you don't do that out on the walk. That's where you pick up a lot of information. But that's where you do things where you make them focus for, in the beginning, 20 or 30 seconds. They just have to sit. Just sit somewhere and stay there. Oh, that's so hard. Okay, just realistic short things. And then increase it. And then teach them, you know, to work with you on a leash and to come to you and sit down and look at you in the face. A lot of little subtle ways to begin to teach little guys how to stay on a task. And it may only be 5 or 10 seconds in the beginning, but you can grow that to minutes at a time. But it's very helpful if you're aware of that's what the dog is battling with. And just like humans with that condition, we don't drug them. You give them coping mechanisms and you begin to work in their little minds that are developing. This is critical with young dogs and puppies, guys. If you spend the time building the synapses for 10 seconds of staying on a task or staying, you know, they're mindful about something. And then that can go to 30 seconds. And then you can add more things where they stay on a task until you have some neural paths in there where they can actually remain engaged in something before you advance on to higher level training. The focus is very, very, very important. Now, I want to talk about motivations and driving forces because that can get into some real problematic areas. So a lot of us, if you buy just a very friendly, calm, nice dog who's happy, whatever, right? Just happy being with you, happy sitting on the floor next to you on the couch, happy going for a nice walk. That's nice. You know, when you have a dog that their motivations are not real big and they like being with you and they like sharing experiences with you and they'll go retrieve a ball if you throw it or, you know, so that dog's motivations are to enjoy life. You know, a nice dog to have, you know, if that's what you want and that's what you're doing. When we buy animals, and this really goes in this retriever world, when we buy animals that are highly motivated and highly driven to do certain things, then we have a dog that is highly motivated and highly driven to do certain things, whether we do that with them or not. So what I'm talking about is, and let's use the retrievers. Okay, these are dogs are predators by nature. Okay, so they like to hunt, just like coyotes and wolves and stuff. They like to hunt and, you know, go kill stuff and eat it. I mean, that's sort of their ancestral history. Now, we've kind of altered that with our domestication of them. But they're predators. In the beginning, that's why these guys hunt. They hunt because they like that. That's what all their ancestors have done to stay alive, and they do that. Our retrievers that we have, right? We have developed in there this desire that anything that they saw or didn't see go down, they'll go get and bring it to you. Right? They do that when they're 6 and 7 weeks old, often, most of the time. particularly the high drive dudes. You throw something, and as long as it's in their vision, and maybe even if it's a little out, they're going to go running out there like life depended on it and bring it back to you. Highly, highly motivated to do these things. And it's on a level that I think that people don't always understand. Many do, but many don't. There's this thing inside of them that is just screaming to get out, basically screaming to be exercised and developed and maintained and utilized and practiced. It's very, very strong. And so when we do that, when you get a little puppy and you take it on the walk every day and you do two or three retrieves in the morning and two or three in the afternoon and you give them something to think about and you do some basic puppy stuff and you make them focus, okay, and retrieving is part of that and being out in that field is part of it, all of these natural inclinations they have and these motivations are being tapped into and are being exercised and relieved and developed. And they're developing mechanisms to deal with these monster driving forces that they have inside of them. And if you continue that and keep going with it, then you wind up with these awesome dogs that, you know, that know why they're on the earth, have a lot of self-confidence, do their jobs really, really well, right? And then they're happy to come in and lay down in the house because they got to go do their thing. I've often likened it to someone who is very compelled to make music, whether it's to play it, to write it, to whatever it is. There are people that are just so compelled with music. And if you don't ever let them play music and listen to music and make music, I don't know what happens, but it's not good for them and it's not good for anybody. And if somebody is compelled to, you know, these distance runners that run 100, 200 miles and stuff, and that's their happy place, and you said, no, you can't do that, you can't, you know, that, then they don't, bad stuff happens, that's not good for them. And all of that urge to do, to be creative, or to exercise these things, or to carry out these things that are inside of them that want to come out, if you don't give them a good outlet for that, then they will create one. And it might be, you know, eating the drywall. It might be fighting through the fence with the other dogs. It might be digging holes. It could be all kinds of things. And then you have this problem dog. Oh, look at this dog. I bought this great dog and look what he's doing. When what you have is a dog with these extraordinary motivations and a lot of cylinders to do it and no outlet and no development of it. And many, many bad behaviors that I see come from that. I'm helping somebody recently whose dog is one of these 18 cylinder dogs, and they've worked and trained a little bit with him and stuff, but he just lives in the yard, in a big yard, front yard, backyard. And they were having their house worked on and worker, and they're not there, they're working, right? And the dog's in the yard and they're letting these workers that are building things and doing construction come in and out. That just horrifies me right there. You just let them loose. They could have stolen them, let them out, done anything, played with them. And that's what they did, was they were playing with him because he's one of these retrievers that would retrieve with two broken legs, right? And so they're having fun. And one time they were playing with him and he reached up and sunk, instead of whatever was in their hand, into their arm. And they were bitten and that got reported. And now this guy has to try to find validation that he doesn't have a mean dog. And he's dealing with another behavioral person who said, looked at the dog and said, I don't think this dog is mean, but he should wear a muzzle whenever he's in public. And then he talks to me and I was like, and that's how I found out. I knew the breeding really well because I've trained dozens of dogs with that very similar or almost identical breeding. 18 cylinder hunting dogs, retrievers, what this was, in the yard with all these construction guys playing with it, just getting carried away. And there are no rules, right? No rules. They found out what a cool retriever is and they're playing with them and stuff. And then he's just winding up. He's just winding up something fierce and all these people, and his owner's not there, and it's just a free for all. And he just gets carried away in his excitement. Who knows how many times they threw stuff for him instead of the two or three with rules and stuff, right? And so that's what happened. And, you know, and it's like, okay, I'm going to see the dog. I'm pretty sure he's not mean, because that'd be the first one in that line I've ever seen. I'm pretty sure that he's the 18-cylinder dog that lives on a yard and doesn't get to do very much and is turned loose and allowed other people to do chaotic, wild, and crazy things with it. That's what happens. That's what happens with dogs like that, because just sitting in a yard and chasing construction workers' stuff they're throwing around is probably one of the worst things that you could do. And on the record, just for everybody out there, don't ever have your dog loose with a bunch of people when you're not around. I can't imagine that. One of them could have said, hey, I need a hunt dog, just taking him. Yeah, just don't get that. So that really lackadaisical, oh, he's a nice dog, everyone will enjoy him, that's insane. He's a dog that was really bred to go do some stuff, physically and mentally demanding stuff. I mean, top shelf breeding for that stuff, highly, highly motivated. And not get to do much, and then everyone's playing with him. Man, jaws are going to start snapping, and they're going to be grabbing at stuff. They're playing tug-of-war, and somebody's arm's going to get in the right place, and now we have a mean, air quotes, mean dog situation. Again, there's somebody who didn't understand what they had exactly with this dog and what you have to do. And that's why on all of these things, I say every dog, I don't care, should have some downtime, right, where they learn to just be quiet and by themselves and just have to stay in their own heads. That's so important. Downtime, quiet, stay in their own heads. And when you allow a highly motivated dog, highly driven dog, to not exercise that and not have to focus and not have to understand and then be turned loose with people that are playing with this really fun toy, very bad things can happen. So after I explained to him about his dog and what he should do, and then also when you're not there, have the dog somewhere safe and where people can't play with this toy. Be like letting somebody drive your Ferrari because it's sitting in the driveway. You know, you wouldn't do that. And it's the same thing with dogs like this. So the motivations of your dog, you need to, now just because if a dog's ADHD and they're just focused, just crazy all over the place, doesn't mean, that's a different thing that I'm talking about. I'm talking about the DNA coming through every cell saying we need to perform these functions. We need to do these things. And if you don't give an outlet for that, again, they will develop one. So that's another important part of that. And the last thing I want to get going on this one is your dog's, ability to process and make sense of things. I'm not sure I'm going to call that intelligence, because I'm not sure about that, even after all these years. But so we have, you know, does this dog connected with us or not? You know, does this dog have the ability to focus when we are connected and listen and take in information? And the other thing you want to do is find out, you really need to understand when you're going to work with them, their ability to process stuff. And one of the big examples I use on this always, and forgive me for doing it again, is two kids in a math class. Now, one kid might be very, very slow, and you have to explain over and over. We're teaching them the multiplier. We're teaching them fractions, right? And we're trying to get them the concept. And the one of them gets it real quick. Yeah. And the other one doesn't get it, and we go over and over, over and over. And eventually they get it. So one of them processes rapidly, and one of them processes slowly. I'm still going to say I don't think this is directly related to their intelligence. It's just what their CPU turns over. It's important that you understand that about your dog. Because just because these two kids, one of them gets the math stuff really quick, yeah, I got it, I can get it, and the other one takes time. In the end, that one that takes the time and it has to work really hard to get it right, maybe the one you want to hire to develop the rockets, because he's going to take the time and he's going to get it right. And the other one always does stuff because it's so easy, fast. He never learned to really bear down and struggle. And is that right? Am I sure that's right? Because everything just comes easy and fast. That one may not be the guy you want designing the rockets. May not be the one. And it's that way with dogs. Sometimes when it takes a while to teach them your basic obedience or to force fetch or to teach them handling stuff or to teach them that, they may just it just turns over more slowly. And so you don't use more pressure with that. You use more repetition. and maintaining consistency in your high standards. And if you got one that gets it real fast, see if 2 days from now they still get it. And if they don't, then you're going to have to just slow stuff down and use some repetition and understand. It may take the guy that gets it fast more time because they get it and they're bored and you stop and then they forget it. And so how animals process, you learn while you are teaching them fundamental things like basic obedience, like holding the bumper. Some dogs, when you teach a retriever to hold a bumper, assuming you got to have some basic obedience first, I think, so they understand that you're here to learn some things. I'm going to teach you new things. So you teach them to hold a bumper. I've had dogs that on one day went, oh, hold it? Yeah, sure. And others that it took 3 weeks. 3 weeks before they just thought, okay, she's going to torture me for a while and stick this thing in my mouth and hold it in here. Oh, when will she stop? Finally, I can get them to go, oh, I'm supposed to hold on to it. I'm not going to say that's a stupid dog. I'm just going to say that's a dog that to process that for them, that is like, no, this makes no sense to me. While the other one's like, yeah, sure. So as you're teaching your dog, even around the house, little things, figure out, do they go really rapidly or do they go really slowly? Again, more pressure is not usually the answer to any of that. It's usually don't drop your standards and just use more repetition and stay with it over time, and you'll get that going a little better. One of the things that I found working with dogs, and this is when people work and have busy lives and families and lots of things going on, this is not a thing they like to hear, but I have found that it's better when you are teaching dogs anything, that if you go almost every day with something, some aspect of teaching, not the same exact thing every day, that would be boring for them like it would be for you, but if you're in a thing of teaching dogs something, teach something every single day, even if it's only 5 minutes and you went into the basement or the backyard to work on obedience or holding or whatever you're working on. You just work on that, even if you don't have a lot of time, instead of just skipping it and I'll catch you on the weekend. If you spend a little bit of time and you keep their brains firing that way, particularly the ADHD and the hard to focus ones, you keep their brains firing even for if it's just a short session, you will get way ahead than if you go, I do not have time, I'm going to have to wait till I'm back on Monday, they'll just have to hang out. Then the neural paths are going to be more of the chaos, non-thinking, non-focused thing. So particularly based on what kind of dog you have, every day is probably going to be better for you developing those neural paths than not. The only time where I have seen more sporadic training work is with a dog that had a very mild level of interest at best. And so that dog I might work every other day. Or at least whatever I did, we might have a day of, we're just going to walk through the field. We're going to walk through the field. You're going to stay with me. We're not going to do any of that tedious technical stuff that you really don't enjoy very much. But I'll come back and do it intermittently. And a lot of times I can get through that way instead of just basically nagging them with something that they really don't enjoy. Same with you. I'm going to use sporadic consistency to get it in without souring you out too much. So if we can look at our dogs this way, and it sometimes it's hard. If you've never done it before, you've never kind of broken this down and looking at these different aspects of your dog, it's a little daunting. But if you just take one thing at a time, you know, just take the connection. See if you can figure out what, and don't just go pick your dog up and make a noise and they look at you and go, he's a connector. But, you know, moving through the field, if you change direction, does he do it? Do they know? Did they notice that you changed or not? Or do you have to keep telling them? That's a connection thing. If they're sitting in a room somewhere and you walk in and make a sound, do they turn over and look right at you? Or whatever, you're not there? There's so many ways to just take note of the connection that you guys have. And not just one day and one time, but try it a variety of ways to see how much there is this thing between you in the air or not. Because the less of that there is, that's going to change the nature of how you need to train this dog. because they're not going to be doing it because they love making you happy. They're going to be doing it because they know they have to. That changes. I train all these guys all the time. Some dogs, I use that real personal deal, and other dogs, there's nothing personal at all. I'm going to go, all right, this is what you're going to do, and this is how you're going to do it. You don't have this choice. And it makes, I can be effective with either one of them. But it's because I know what I've got. The focus thing, really important. Dogs cannot learn if they are not focused. And if they don't have focus, you can't just start banging them over the head to try and make them do things. You have to develop the focus in there so you have something through which you can teach them things. And you develop focus by doing little things and making them hold their focus. If it's sitting or walking with you, right with you, do it for short periods of time in the beginning until you can see that they are being able to hold themselves on task longer and longer. When you get that, then you can start more of the teaching stuff. That's just how that works, period. And then understand what their motivations are, what their interest level is, and do they need to... And one thing I just got to say right now, when you have one of these highly motivated, highly energetic dogs, the thing that people like to do is exercise them a lot. They think that's the answer. It's not the answer. When you have a dog that's just like really fired up about stuff and your way of dealing with it is to take them out on the ATV, you know, or go for a walk through the field and just let them run and run and run and hope this, or let them with it. My favorite, put them out with the other dog so they can tussle and tussle and play and play and take their energy down. The whole time this dog is doing this, their mind, if you could look inside of it, is just a chaotic crazy. Woohoo! There isn't a linear thought in there. There's no consistent mindfulness about anything. They are just blowing off steam, and all the neural paths in there are just all over the place. Just all over the place. There is nothing worse for a dog, any dog, than that. Nothing. But if you take these highly motivated guys and you go out and do physical things like running a set of marks or even walking through a field, staying in gun range, practicing moving without you telling them how to move, right? If you do all, they get to move, and at the same time they have to think and respond and be aware and gather their mind up. And the more you can make them think, the more of energy and motivation you will relieve from them, and the easier it'll be. So the wild and crazy guys, the last thing you want to do is turn them loose doing wild and crazy things. You want to take the energy down, exhaust the motivation and the high drive, give them things to do where they have to think while they are doing them, and you will get just dramatically better results. So they have to focus. Even then, they have to focus. They have to connect with you. They have to understand what you want them to do. They might be running a 300-yard long set of marks back and forth, but they got to mark well and come right back and sit and wait. That takes a lot out of a highly motivated dog. Chasing the ATV or the other dog around the field, that just makes your problem worse. So I'm going to end on that. It's important to understand the creature that you've got before you design up and start undertaking your training program. And it takes some thought, and it takes some observation. It takes you also being very focused, very connected, very motivated. I mean, you got to be all these things that you would like your dog to do. So maybe think about your own, where you're strong, where you're weak. Look at this stuff. The more you understand your student, the more dramatically you can improve what your teaching thing is. So I hope that's good for everybody. I am going to put together some of these really excellent questions I've gotten, but I'm going to base them off of this. I'm going to tell you that right now. I'm going to base them off of, let's talk about what kind of dog we're working with before I give you answers to some of these questions about how to accomplish some of the goals you have. So I wish everybody well. It's competitive season. We're all rocking and rolling everywhere. Wish everybody the best of luck. And I'll be back soon with some interesting listener questions.